Are you looking to take your knowledge of Egypt to the next level? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt with your host, historian and Egyptology PhD grad from UCLA, Eric.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt. And in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about really breaking news and what could be one of the biggest archaeological discoveries, certainly of this century, but really of not maybe the past 50, 75 years. We're talking about the new imaging that's being done on the Great Pyramid and some of the subsidiary pyramids at Giza. Now, when we're talking about that imagery, what essentially they're doing is using a technology to look at the way that the stones actually retain heat and the way in which that might indicate the presence of different structural anomalies. Now, I'll get into what some of these anomalies might be in a little bit, and I'll break down a little bit more kind of the science of what they're doing. But first, it's necessary to kind of give a little context here. Now, we're dealing with a lot of pyramids in ancient Egypt. We're dealing with around 140, 138, something like that. And in fact, you know, we find more occasionally. But when we talk about those ones that we know, especially the pyramids that were built for the pharaohs, one of the things that might surprise most people is their inconsistency. Now, anybody who's seen pictures just at Giza knows that they're not all built to the same size. That we have large discrepancies in size, not just at Giza, but throughout the country. But what they may not realize is that there's also a great amount of variability in the internal structure of these pyramids, as well as in their construction techniques. Now, if you talk to any Egyptologist, at least anyone who's being honest with you, they're probably going to ascribe to a certain theory as to how the pyramids were built, but the truth is we don't really know. You know, some people have speculated that we're dealing with a ramp structure, and most would probably agree that we're using ramps of some kind. But is that one long ramp that leads up to the pyramid and where you're pushing the stones up? Well, that creates problems because that ramp eventually takes up more labor and more work to create than the pyramid itself. So some people might speculate then that we're using a series of ramps or smaller ramps. One of the more popular theories is the idea of a spiraling ramp that is built around the pyramid that kind of moves around its sides that could even be incorporated in the structure itself. There's another theory that there's a series of smaller internal ramps with small checks, and that these, in addition to the use of some levers, would actually be able to push the stones into place. Now, regardless of what theory these individuals may believe in, what's clear is that we don't really know. And this is made more confusing by the fact that the internal layout of all of the pyramids are different. So, just to kind of focus on some of the main pyramids. When we're talking about the Great Pyramid, the largest pyramid in ancient Egypt, the only one of the seven wonders of the ancient world to still be standing. A structure that was, for millennia into the Middle Ages, the largest structure ever built on Earth. We can see how incredible of an engineering feat we're dealing with. And inside, we're dealing with a structure that really has kind of three main components to it. We have an entrance that's going into the pyramid itself. It slopes down at one point and leads to what appears to be an unfinished subterranean chamber. And that's kind of not necessarily considered to be one of the main features, or at least I wouldn't consider it to be. Now, shooting off from that downward slope leading to the subterranean chamber is a chamber that leads to what's called the Grand Gallery. Now, the Grand Gallery, most of you may have seen images of. It's a huge passageway. It's about 150 feet long. It's only about 7 or so feet wide. And it's about 30 or so feet high. And I'm giving you these numbers from memory, so forgive me if I'm off by a little bit, but I'm just trying to paint a quick picture. And this long kind of chamber is known as the Grand Gallery. That Grand Gallery leads to the King's Chamber, There's also a passageway that shoots off kind of at the beginning of the Grand Gallery that leads to the Queen's Chamber. And those are kind of our main internal rooms or elements. There's some other, you know, elements as well that, and this is kind of shows where it gets very complex. There's five, for instance, small chambers above the King's Chamber. And these are thought to be relieving chambers, or at least that's what they call them, and that perhaps, you know, these were built as protection in case there was a possible collapse from the weight of the stone, as these chambers weren't really intended to be seen or used. And we can even tell that by looking inside of them, because they're not finished, they're not smooth. Some of the stones still actually retain different marks from the masons working on them and different elements of paint, which is really cool that we can actually have traces of paint from 4,500 years ago. So we're dealing, you know, with a structure that is brand new, that's large, that's evolved. And in addition to this, in addition to these main chambers, we also have some other elements shooting off. Now, for the King's Chamber, we have two kind of what are traditionally, and well, maybe not traditionally, I should say, but originally people thought these might be, you know, airways. Now it's believed, or I would say, at least I believe, that these are actually religious functions. They kind of lead out and point to sets of stars, and I believe that these are, you know, ways in which it was thought this is kind of aiming the king's soul towards some of these netherworld destinations so he can, you know, join the circumpolar stars or some of these other celestial bodies, which was considered one of the afterlife alternatives for the king. But that gets complicated because the queen has some, but those don't lead outside, they're sealed. And in addition to these elements that are kind of strange, we even have new elements and new things that are being discovered all the time. For instance, just about, you know, 15, 20 years ago, they began to do scientific work inside the Great Pyramid using robots, using cameras, and they actually found the existence of what are kind of referred to as gates from some of these elements going through the so-called Queen Chamber shaft. We have what looked to be copper handles inside of these. There was one where they actually, you know, drilled through a small kind of hole and went through, and behind that was what appeared to be another door. So this is all modern work that's being carried out, showing really how much there is to be explored about these. Now, this is made even more complicated by the fact that, as I said, there's no regularity to pyramid structure. So if we, for instance, were to look at some of the other pyramids, and I won't go into to too many, but just to give kind of a brief synopsis of a few more. If we're looking at Khafre's pyramid, the second of the great pyramids at Giza, there we see a chamber that's much different. We see a chamber that's not located in the center of the pyramid, kind of as we have with Khufu's pyramid. That large grand gallery we don't have anymore. Instead of a singular entrance, we have two entranceways. So we already have some major differences going on here. And these differences extend not just to the internal layout of some of these pyramids, but to their construction. You know, we have some, for instance, once we get to the Middle Kingdom, there they abandon the idea of actually building pyramids completely out of limestone. So the Great Pyramids are carved out of, or at least we think they're carved mainly out of, local limestone. They would make large, rough blocks, pull them into place, push them together. That would form kind of the core of the pyramid. And then they would case it with nicer stones, usually limestone from Tura, although in some cases, you know, depending on the pyramid and the dynasty we're talking about, they might actually use granite for some of the pyramid. Well, that's really expensive, really time-consuming. By the time we get to the Middle Kingdom, they began making that core out of mud brick. So it's much cheaper, much faster, and then they just begin to case the mud brick in that nice limestone. And we see that in some cases, we have a structure, an internal structure that's not even built within the pyramid. It's actually a subterranean structure that they build, they secure, and then they build a pyramid on top of it. And that's one of the things we see for the pyramid of Amenemhat III, which is a one that's collapsed now, but it's got a crazy subterranean structure with complicated passages. So we're dealing again with a much different structure than the Great Pyramids. So it may seem like I'm on a tangent here, but bear with me. It'll come back together. We've got all these different pyramids. They're different shapes. They're different sizes. They've got different internal layouts. And we can tell, even though we don't know for sure how they were built, that the construction process for these was a gradual process, that they're actually making determinations and readjusting what they're doing as they're building these pyramids. We can see that quite often they'll be, you know, maybe making a chamber, making a shaft, and the angle on it will change. They'll have to change the angle because it appears that maybe their calculations were off. So by doing the new testing they're doing now, what they're hoping to do is to get a peek inside the pyramids. And here's how they do that. So what they're doing is they're looking at the pyramids with thermal scanning. Now, the principle behind thermal scanning is something that most of us would be intuitively familiar with. So, for instance, if you're outside on a hot day and you were to, say, touch a metal door that was out in the sun, it's usually going to be really hot. You know, metal conducts heat really well. On the other hand, if you were to, say, sit on a wooden bench, it's not going to conduct heat as well. It's not going to be as hot. Similarly, metal, although it conducts heat very well, it also cools rapidly. So, you know, if we look at the close of the, at the end of the day, if we're looking at around sunset, that metal might actually be cooler than the wood we were looking at. So that's the basic principle, that different types of material and the thickness of that material will create differences in the way that material absorbs heat and in the way in which heat dissipates from it. So what they've been doing the past 4 days, really, I mean, again, this is cutting-edge research and results, and just something that's really coming about now, is they're taking these thermal images at different points in the day. They're looking at it at the end of the day, when it's been absorbing heat throughout the day. So in theory, that retention should be very high. They're looking at it through, you know, midday, when it should be, you know, it's the hottest outside. They're taking thermal scans at dawn, when all night heat has had a chance to dissipate. And what they've seen are anomalies within the Great Pyramid. So the thermal scanning is showing that the speed in which different areas of the pyramid are heating and cooling seem to indicate what they call anomalies in the structure. And there are some particularly impressive ones. One of the particularly impressive ones is actually located on the eastern side of the pyramid, kind of around ground level. And this one seems to look like there's some sort of structure on the eastern side at ground level, and that behind that we might be looking with at some sort of area that's open. And the way they can tell this is if the limestone was completely solid throughout, we would expect, right, a solid dissipation of heat. But when we see that some structures are hotter than others, and we're dealing with the same type of material, it indicates that there's a thermal difference on the other side of that limestone. So what we're seeing is an air current, or perhaps just an open space, that's allowing the heat to dissipate from two sides, as opposed to just dissipating or bleeding off from the one. So these differences in surface temperature that speak to internal air currents seem to show what might actually be a hidden chamber, or a chamber that we know nothing about, inside the Great Pyramid. And that's what their speculation is behind that eastern side anomaly. Because again, we're dealing with a row where all the stones are uniform, and then we see a difference in the formation of the heat signatures. So we see what looks to be something like a small passage in the ground leading up to the pyramid, and then it reaches an area of a different temperature. And the real question is, what is behind that? I mean, I can't express how exciting this is. You know, when we talk about something like the tomb of King Tut, and you talk about an undiscovered tomb or a tomb that was virtually unmolested from the New Kingdom, imagine if we can find something, objects that have been sealed within this chamber since the Old Kingdom. You know, and I'm not talking just about, you know, treasure. You know, we could be dealing with, you know, furniture, documents, or it could be something completely different. What we could be dealing with are perhaps remnants of a ramp, things that actually speak to the internal structure of how this pyramid was built. And in addition, I should say, to this main anomaly I'm kind of talking about now, there have been some other smaller anomalies that they're seeing higher up on the pyramid. So this is something where we really are closer than we've ever been to uncovering some of the mysteries of the Great Pyramids and being able to tell, okay, how might they have built that? And is there more inside? Now, of course, there's still obviously a lot more work to do. You know, they're going to have to continue doing this imagery, and then they're going to have to do some, you know, targeted studies to actually see, perhaps using some, you know, radar. Okay, how deep is this anomaly in? What are the possible ways we can access it? Of course, as much as possible, right? We want to be non-invasive. We don't want to destroy anything. So it's probably not going to be soon that we actually have a final answer. But I had a couple requests to do this topic. And again, I mean, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but this is really, you know, truly exciting. And it goes to show what's really at the core of what I love about Egypt, which is how much left there actually is to discover and to learn about Egypt. You know, while Egypt is so popular, there's not very many Egyptologists. And there are still literally hundreds of documents out there that need to be translated. There are thousands of archaeological sites that need to be excavated. So to see things like this, that some of the sites where we've been excavating for really the entire modern era, and you could even make the argument going to the Great Pyramid, there were attempts, you know, in antiquity to kind of excavate that and to get into that. We're really talking about just an extraordinary time where we're just learning so much more about ancient Egypt. So that's it, a quick podcast. I just wanted to get a little bit into the science behind what's going on at the Great Pyramid, what it might mean. Hopefully we'll get more answers soon, although usually academia doesn't tend to move that quickly. But I have to say, and I really have to give kudos to the Egyptian government on this one, you know, they're making this really completely open as possible. They're bringing in international teams, and they're inviting any researchers, you know, who are interested, who have that expertise to come in to work on this, to come take part and to help analyze these samples. And the fact that these scans are literally, as of today, 4 days old, 5 days old, and they're opening them up, they're showing them, they're explaining what they're doing. I mean, it's a type of open source scholarship that I just think is incredible, getting as many people involved, not holding that information, you know, as a tightly guarded secret and having one or two people work on it. They're really making this a kind of global effort. And so far, the results are just amazing and promising. Well, that's it for this time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit ericsguidetoancientegypt.com. If you liked this episode, please don't forget to leave a review on iTunes and Stitcher. We'll catch you next time.